Thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials, as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Welcome back to Wine for That Street. It is hard to believe that we have been doing this for 26 months. Yep, that's right. Today's letter of the day is Z, and it stands for the mighty Zinfandel. This is a grape variety that has played a major role in the history of wine in the United States, one which, since the beginning of Wine for That Street, has had the longest and easiest to find history. So settle in, uncork, unscrew, or saber a bottle, and join in the fun as we wrap up the first season of Wine for That Street. Sláinte! Welcome to Wine for That Street!
Woo! This is our last episode. We made
for season one. For season one, yep.
Yeah,
season one. We are...
26 episodes.
26 episodes. And, you know, when you hear the letter Z, I don't know, the first thing that really comes to mind is Zinfandel. So, you know, we had to end season one with Zinfandel. So, first and foremost, thank you to everybody who has supported Wine for That Street since we came up with this concept. And I am totally enjoying doing this series.
I am too.
I love being with Deb once a month and being able to share knowledge, and not even just share knowledge, because in all honesty, like, I'm learning for each of these episodes.
I am too. And I love learning, especially when we do obscure grapes or region.
Yes.
I mean, it really makes the hunt and the episode, you know, just so much more all that, because we're learning new stuff and the food pairings, like, I want to try some of them, and
you know. So it's been a wonderful 26 months. And there definitely will be season two. We're not ending this. But so, what do we think? Should we let Elmo do his final season one? All right. Let's see how this goes. Street. So it is 5 o'clock for me, 8 o'clock for Debbie, and way back, I think we started this tradition in like episode 3. We do not drink until we are together.
I have to say, I've drank before today.
But not this bottle, not this.
Oh no, I just opened this.
Yes,
now.
Not
I
this.
Had a boat wine.
Yes, you have. You've been enjoying your boat wines all summer long. So here we go. Honestly, one of the best sounds ever on the face of the earth. So, Sláinte, I am drinking tonight, and this is sort of kind of cheating because I have had this wine before. Not today, but I have had this wine before. I am drinking Tobin James.
I'm drinking Artisan, and I'm going to tell you this was a sample from Donna White PR. We'll go into more of this later, but it's good. I like it.
That's good.
So, yeah, we ended with a bang. Hopefully you like yours.
Yes, yes. I'm a big fan of this wine. Go ahead, Deb. Introduce yourself.
Oh, I forgot. So I'm Debbie Giaquindo. I'm known as the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess. I'm a wine blogger, wine writer, author of Tapping the Hudson Valley. I'm chairperson for the Hudson Valley Wine and Spirits Competition, which is coming up in 3 weeks. And boy, do I have a lot of work to do between now and then. I'm also co-owner and hostess with the Mostess at Kitchen 330 in Stone Harbor, where we proudly sell Justina wines. And we're kicking ass with her wines because I'm sold out now until I have to chase the UPS man on Thursday or Friday. And I'm not
that
sure
is
if
after,
I left anything out.
Wait, that's after I walked 1.5 miles with the case of wine to make sure that it got to UPS as soon as possible.
So, and I'll track my UPS man down. So if I forgot anything, I'll just think of it later. But that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
All right. And I am Lori. My husband and I own Justina Wines out of Paso Robles. It's been a very, very busy week for us. We are getting ready to do our September club shipment. So the Chalk Club is getting organized, which means that I am busy writing newsletters, busy writing the MailChimp campaigns, busy doing tasting notes, busy organizing all of the bottles, all of that stuff. It's fun. But it is tiring and it does take up a lot of time. But in addition to owning Justina Wines, I am also a blogger and a podcaster at Exploring the Wine Glass. So if you are on the socials, you can find me at both Justina Wines and Exploring the Wine Glass. Graduated UC Davis and SAT Level 2 with distinction. And it's 100 degrees here, so I'm hot.
Oh, it's hazy, hot, and humid here.
Oh, yeah?
In the 90s.
But it's a dry heat here.
Yeah, well, lucky you.
All right. So we're going to get right into it, right? And I am up with the history. Most people in the wine world have heard of ZAP, but in case you haven't, it stands for the Zinfandel Advocates and Producers. Their mission is to live in a world where Zinfandel is the most celebrated American wine. They are dedicated to advancing public knowledge and appreciation for American Zinfandel and its unique place in our culture and history. So they're located in California, and you can find them online at zinfandel.org. Now, why did I bring up ZAP? Because I actually had the pleasure of attending a masterclass at CorkBuzz in New York City in May, which was sponsored by ZAP. And we actually tasted through 12 different Zinfandels. So that is a lot of Zinfandel. I mean, Zinfandel is kind of a big wine. So to taste through 12 of them is really quite a feat. So it really was an amazing experience because what happened was I got to taste wines from the different regions in California and really show what the terroir can do for Zinfandel. And if you are interested in hearing that masterclass, that's a little self-promotion there. My episode 113 is that masterclass. So, Zinfandel is thought to be one of the oldest grape varieties from which wine is still being made. There is evidence that places the first Zinfandel wine in the Caucasus area, which is situated in the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, and it was mainly occupied by Armenia, Azerbaijan, I don't know how to say that, Georgia, and Russia. And that was all the way back in 6000 BC. Research conducted by UC Davis viticulturists have given insight into the history of the grape and its path. The Primitivo grape in Puglia, Italy, was found to be genetically identical to Zinfandel. However, Italians were sure it was not one of their traditional varietals. So historically, Croatia has had several indigenous varieties related to Zinfandel, but most were sadly lost in the 19th century. So one well-documented route of Zinfandel to California indicates that the grape came from Austria, and it is possible that Austria obtained the vines during its rule over Croatia. It wasn't until 2001 that researchers actually discovered 9 remaining vines of locally known, all right, now here we go, to Srilyanakashtelenicsika. That was so horrible. So horrible. But it's actually spelled C-R-L-J-E-N-A-K. So it's something like Srilyanakashtelenicsika. Yeah.
All right, I like that.
Yeah. Okay. And this is in the Croatia's Dalmatian coast. So DNA fingerprinting confirms that the ancient Croatian variety has the same DNA structure as Zinfandel. Historians have traced the Zinfandel roots into the United States back to the 1820s when George Gibbs, a Long Island, New Yorker, actually owned a nursery, brought cuttings from the imperial collection of the plant species in Vienna, Austria. By 1832, a Boston nursery was advertising Zinfandel vines for sale. And then sometime in between 1835 and 1845, Zinfandel had become a popular grape in the northeastern United States, but it was mostly grown in hothouses. So around that time, Frederick McAndre, the nursery owner from Massachusetts, was credited with bringing the Zinfandel vines to California. Not a single photo of what this man looked like, but I found
his headstone.
I found his headstone, man. Huh? Is that determination or what? Right?
That is funny.
Right? So after the 1849 gold rush, timber and wire were scarce. Production of Zinfandel grapes surged because they didn't need the trellising, because they basically did the head because
gnarly
of...
Gnarly vines.
What?
Gnarly vines.
Gnarly vines, right. So they're what's called head trained. So there's no wires, you don't need the stakes, and since this grew so well on this type of format, Zinfandel really kind of took a lead. Requiring no equipment, very scarce resources, it's actually still used today for Zinfandel. If you're driving around and you see vines like this, it's going to be Zinfandel. This is how Zinfandel is grown even today. So Zinfandel's expansion in the 20th century is a testament to its hardy constitution. So while most of California vineyards were destroyed by phylloxera in the late 1800s, there were actually some Zinfandel vines that actually were replanted on rootstock starting around 1885. So by mid-century, it became the most important varietal to California red table wines. An 1888 census actually showed that at that point, over one-third of all vines planted were Zinfandel. As vineyards were replanted after the phylloxera destroyed most of Northern California vineyards, the Italian immigrant families took a lead in growing and making Zinfandel. And they brought into the concept what we now know as field blends. So like when we blend our wines, we're blending afterwards. The grapes come in independently and we're blending afterwards. Field blend is when you have multiple varieties or different clones or anything like that, and they're just picking everything in the vineyard and everything is going in together. They brought with them the tradition of field blends, which means that they were using mostly Petit Syrah, Alicante Boucher, and Carignan to co-mingle with the Zinfandels in the vineyard. And then these grapes were harvested along with the Zinfandel clusters, crushed right there, and all put into the bottle together. So they were doing this to add complexity to the wine. Now, what I think is one of the most hysterical historical facts about wine is this little block right here. So during Prohibition, it was actually illegal to sell wine, but it wasn't illegal to ship grapes for home winemaking. And Zinfandel played a major role in this because of its thick skins, and it was able to, those grapes were able to be transferred across country and survive. Where, you know, if you had like Pinot with its thin grapes, with its thin skin, it's not going to survive. So Zinfandel here was like the perfect one. But this block was awesome because what they actually put on there was do not add sugar and water because that would be wine, right? So it was illegal for wine, but they just made sure that they let the people know exactly how to get what they wanted. So a nice little gray area around the law. Sadly, in the 1970s, California wineries began to draw free-run juice from Zinfandel grapes, fermenting it as white Zinfandel. Now, white Zinfandel actually started by pure accident. Sutter Home had what is called a stuck fermentation. So for whatever reason, the yeast decided they were done fermenting, but there was still sugar there. Now, that is a nightmare for any winemaker. And nowadays, we have things that we can do to kind of help that fermentation along. But back in the 1970s, Sutter Home basically was like, oh, shit, what are we going to do? We've got all this wine and it's not going through fermentation. What are we going to do? Intro to white Zinfandel, which has now actually kind of harmed the Zinfandel because when people hear Zinfandel, they often think white Zinfandel. White Zinfandel is sweet. Zinfandel, the red Zinfandel, which this was actually made out of, but the Zinfandel is red wine and it is very often dried to or fermented to dryness. And I think I'm done with that.
You're ending with white Zin?
I'm ending with the horror of white Zin.
Oh my goodness.
So, yes, ending with the horror of white Zin. But this was probably the easiest grape variety to find history on. And a lot of it, you know, we've learned about it from visiting Lodi because they are so well known for their Zinfandel. I thought I'd end with the horror. Historically, a very important aspect of
it
the
changed
history.
Wine history, yes. when white Zin did come out.
Yes.
But it also
rude.
it also changed the perspective of when you say Zinfandel, people automatically think white Zin.
Right. Right.
You know, I don't. I immediately think red Zin, but there are people that think
yep.
that. And that's fine because it's marketed to them and they enjoy it.
Yep.
So.
And as we always say, drink what you like. I am not saying
right.
anything bad about white Zinfandel. If you enjoy white Zinfandel,
you go right
for
ahead.
It, man. Go for it.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
All right, Deb.
All right. So I'll start here with the characteristics. So Zinfandel is black and blue skin grape. It is the second most planted grape in California. A lighter Zinfandel made in a lighter style will have 13.5% alcohol percentage. And the bolder, spicier Zinfandel will have probably around 15-16% alcohol content, much higher alcohol content. High elevation Zinfandels tend to be more savory in intensity and richness. So the second most planted grape in California, they like warm weather, but not hot. And as much as their skin is, you know, black and blue, their skin is thin and sensitive to the sun, but they like the dry climate. Too much moisture can rot the grapes. They reach their best expression when the growing season is sunny, dry during the day, cool temperatures at night, and the vines are best suited to rocky, alveolar soil on hillside planting. So general characteristics, and the first thing that comes to mind when I think of Zinfandel is jammy and medium acidity. Zinfandel can just be very, very, very jammy. You will have the flavors of cherry, strawberry, blueberry, plum, boysenberry. There's cranberry, black cherry. There's just a lot going on in Zinfandel. Plum, blackcurrant, brambly fruit is another term that you'll hear a lot when you talk about Zinfandel. And when it's brambly fruit, it's really kind of like a mixture of raspberry and blackberry. Then you also get the black pepper and the licorice. And I have to say, I'm not a licorice person, but I like licorice and wine. And of course, I do love the black pepper. So here we have, we'll talk about the lighter medium bodied wines and the fuller, bolder old vines. Zinfandel is produced in a wide variety of styles. And basically, you have the lighter medium body style wines that focus on the red fruit, some jammy qualities, some spice, and some peppery characteristics. A red table wine produced from Zinfandel grapes picked at optimal balance of sugar and acidity yields 13.5% to 14.5% alcohol. Extended skin contact during fermentation and aging in fine oak barrels generally produces wines with an intensely fruity character, plus the balance and complexity expected in wine. Then when you go for the bigger, bolder, riper style Zinfandels, they come from the old vines, and they can be really, really dense, concentrated. Sometimes they might be a little bit too jammy. The jamminess might just really come out. There might be some pruny, raisiny qualities, fruity, jam, black, and red cherry. And you also get some cinnamon and clove, plum, and licorice. A red wine produced from Zinfandel grapes that are riper than those used for the table wines. These wines are notable for the intensity and complexity of their fruit flavors. They can be very complex, and I'll tell you, the wine that I'm drinking is pretty complex. Within the big style, there are a range approaches to, you know, there's an acid and tannin ratio from softer wines with less acid and tannin, where the fruit is more focused, to high extracted wines with significant structure and tannin levels. So these wines have alcohol levels typically between 14.5% and 16%. So here I just went over the different growing regions in California and what you can expect from Zinfandel that is produced in these different regions. Amador County, you're going to find big, full-bodied, extra ripe, jammy, brambly fruit with aromas of sweet berries. In the Santa Cruz Mountains, they'll be complex and deep. Dry Creek Valley, you'll find Zinfandel that's juicy with bright fruit, balanced acidity, notes of blackberry, pepper, spicy but yet balanced. Paso, soft and round. In Napa, it'll be plummy and intense, tasting red berry fruit with cedar and vanilla, tends toward a claret style. Russian River Valley, typically spicy, somewhat lower in alcohol than most Zins. Medicino County, high quality, and in Lodi, juicy and approachable, and is often from old vines. So you get like different, you can get the young, jammy, then you can get the complex. There's two different styles. I prefer the old vine, the complex style, personally.
So I think Zinfandel is very most known for old vine. Like when you hear Zinfandel, people get all excited when they see old vine on the label. But I have to share, being, you know, winemaker here, I have to share, there is no legal definition for old vine. You can call anything you want old vine. And one of the funniest things that I have ever learned, real life experience in wine making, was way, way, way back before Mike and I actually made wine. We were in Napa and we pulled up to this gentleman. And I actually have spoken about him before, because he was the same guy who said you needed to age the wine a bit. So took his hand over my glass and shook it up and said, here, it's 5 years older now. But he also told me, he gave us some wine, and he's like, oh, these are my old vines. This is my old vine Zinfandel. And I'm like, oh, all right, well, how old? He's like, listen, I planted them 2 days before I planted these vines. So these are my old vine Zinfandels. So that has always stuck in my head. It doesn't matter. Like, he literally planted them 2 days before. They were separated by a driveway too. But he planted them 2 days before, and that's what he calls old vine. So there is no legal stipulation of what is old vine. However, there are regions that are taking it upon themselves to declare what is old vine. And Lodi is actually one of those. So Lodi is very, in my opinion, they care so much about their grapes and so much about their wines and their community that they come together and they regulate themselves more than the TTB or the, you know, California, you know, the ABV, whatever, come together and do anything. You know, they've got their own regulations for when they can water, what they can do, what they plant, what they can call this, what they can call that. And they are now, from my understanding, they are now getting together to actually classify what is young vine, what is old vine, and what is ancient vine. And this is all taking upon on themselves. And I, you know, applaud them for doing so, because I think there's things out there that I think wine can be confusing to so many people. And if certain things can be a little bit more, this is what it means, I think it's a good thing. So that's my little public service announcement there.
There should be some definition, though, of old vines. I totally agree.
Right. Looking to be in the know about Dracena wines? Want to know when we release our new wines? Find out about all of our accolades and get some behind-the-scenes information? Well, all you need to do is sign up for our newsletter. There is no commitment necessary, and I promise you we won't spam your mailbox with loads of messages. Need another reason to sign up? Quite possibly the best reason? You will immediately get a code for a special discount on all of our wines and be privy to newsletter-only specials. Let Dracena Wines turn your moments into great memories. Sign up simply by heading to our website, dracenawines.com, and fill out the pop-up or sidebar. It will take less than a minute of your time, but the rewards will last forever. It's time to talk about our wines. I am taking a Tobin James, and it is a French Camp vineyard. And Tobin James kind of doesn't often do a single vineyard designate, so this is a little special for them. It is actually a 2012. I've had this baby for quite some time. Mike and I are fans of Tobin James, and as we were discussing offline, Deb, that, you know, if you go to Paso, they're definitely a place you're going to go visit. When you're coming into Paso, if you're on the east side, they are the first winery, actually, that you are going to pass.
They're very good up by horse, if I remember right. They have a thing there you can tie your horse up in front.
Yes. So the whole tasting room is like a Western saloon.
Yes, okay? Way cool.
It is very, very cool. And Tobin James's story is actually pretty cool. So Tobin James was working at a different winery as an assistant winemaker, and they had 6 tons of fruit that they could not process. So he was like, well, can I have them? You know? And they're like, yeah, whatever. So they gave him those 6 tons. A year and a half later, he created what was the 1985 Blue Moon Zinfandel, and it claimed several gold medals. It was like a winner right from the get-go. So he continued to make wines at the other facility. And then in 1993, he built the facility that you visited. And the reason why it's all Western saloon-like is because that actually used to be an old stagecoach stop. That location was a stagecoach stop. So he just took it to heart what it was all about. And that's how he created it. So when you go in, it's like walking into the old West. There's a bar, you know, the bar is a huge bar, when you walk in. And, actually, Debbie, I don't know if they mentioned this or when you were there, if you noticed it. So when you walk into the tasting room, there's wine bars to taste, but straight back, there is a huge bar, right? And it's a massive, massive bar. And that's the actual bar that Jesse James used to settle up to.
Oh, cool.
Jesse James actually has quite a bit of history in Paso Robles, but so that was the bar that he used to do. And there actually is even a rumor that there's a bullet hole that he shot in that bar, in the bar itself. So that's kind of cool. And Tobin James apparently went through a lot of effort to get that bar there and in there. So I just have always loved that story. I love that, you know, he's taken everything to heart, you know, being Western and all that stuff. And, you know, like I said, Jesse James, you know, big role in Paso Robles. And it's nice to see that the history has continued to be recognized there. So that is Tobin James.
That is Tobin James. So I have artisan wine. And it is part of the Hess collection. It's kind of dark. It's a very bold wine. So a little bit about artisan. I'm just going to read the spec sheet that I have here because I think they say it best. The vision behind artisan is to honor the art of making Zinfandel from old vine plantings and to work with family-owned farms throughout Mendocino and Sonoma counties. Artisan wines have been handcrafted by winemaker Randall Johnson since Artisan's inception in 2002 and reflect the tradition of Zinfandel winemaking that has been handed down throughout the generations. So they source their grapes from various places. They are part of the Hess family estates. This Zinfandel, I'm telling you, it's bold. It is very complex. There's a lot going on in it. I was just writing some notes here, but I will say it's 85% Zinfandel, 15% Petit Syrah. So I think the Petit Syrah gives it the darker color. I mean, Zinfandel can be dark anyway, but I think it's a little bit more red, and I think this adds a little bit more of the purplish to it with the Petit Syrah. It's aged in barrels, French oak barrels, for 1 to 2 years, or the barrels are 1 to 2 years old, and it has 14.8% alcohol.
Well, that's a young, that's a light one. Mine is 15.4, baby.
I wonder what the other one is, the 2016 one I have. Yeah. So I couldn't decide which one to open tonight, but I had the spec sheet on the 17, so I opened that. I have a 16.2. So I guess tomorrow I'm going to open that and do a vertical tasting and compare the two.
Yeah, that's something about Paso. Paso Zinfandel, those are big wines. 15 is not... You know, under 15, I think I might keel over and from shock.
But so, you know what? As much I can, I can taste the alcohol in it.
Oh, can you?
It's fairly hot.
Okay. So this actually is this. I wouldn't guess it was 15.4, and we know that since it's 15.4, it really can be 16.4. It's not hot at all. It is not hot at all. This is a nice wine. And, you know, mostly Zinfandel, you're going to usually sit down with some sort of meat, which you'll talk about with the food pairings, or I'll talk about with the food
you'll
pairings.
You'll talk about.
But this is not a burn. I'm not getting alcohol. I'm not getting that. I'm getting earth. I'm getting that distinct pepper, the black pepper. But it's actually kind of... mixed fruit. There's red fruit and dark fruit. So it is very complex. And then on the palate, it just takes your palate and it just coats your tongue. And it just, I don't know, makes it like a happy place in there. And it finishes with cocoa.
Okay.
Like, it is so cool. It finishes with a nice cocoa, and it's got a pretty decent, I wouldn't say long finish. I would go with a medium plus finish. But this is, how much was yours? I know it's a sample, but.
Oh, you know what? I don't know. I don't know how much it is.
I think I saw with.
$16.
How much?
$16.
Okay. This is a bit more costly. This is $38. But it's a single vineyard designated wine, which is a legal You cannot claim that without legal. There is legal meaning behind that. Yeah. But well, I'm a little sad.
Mine
this is my
pretty
last
complex
one.
For, you know, a
for
young
16
wine.
Bucks,
it's
yeah.
Pretty, it's pretty complex. Yeah. There's like a blackberry type of, almost like blackberry, juicy blackberry pie in the nose. I get plum, boysenberry, a little black pepper, same palate. I get, there's red, black fruit. There is almost like a cinnamon.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely cinnamon, clovey on the finish. Mm-hmm. It's very nice. It's very complex. It's my kind of zen.
There you go.
There yeah.
You go. Very nice.
Yeah.
So... cheers
so
to that.
What do we eat with the zen?
Cheers to that. So what are we going to eat with Zinfandel? Grilled barbecue chicken. Okay. I mean, basically, I think if there was a marriage made in wine heaven, it's Zinfandel and barbecue. Pretty much barbecue any type of meat, and Zinfandel is going to be an excellent choice for you. So Italian sausage dishes are a great idea. This one happens to be Italian sausage stuffed peppers. And I really liked the idea of this. I thought that the pepper in the dish with the sausage and the fennel just would be a great combination to go with the earthiness and the clove, those baking spices that you get in a Zinfandel. Oven-baked ribs. Again, I mean, I think the jam of Zinfandel is meat. I mean, meat.
It would have went well with, I had truffle sausages for dinner tonight.
Oh, so yeah. That would go too. Yeah. Thanksgiving dinner. So I think Zinfandel is a perfect wine for a Thanksgiving dinner. And I don't think it really often is looked at as, you know, on Thanksgiving, but I think that the cranberries and the turkey and all of that stuff that you have on the table would go really well with a Zinfandel. Now, that's a traditional Thanksgiving dinner. My Thanksgiving dinner consists of green beans and grand biscuits, but everybody else is eating all of that stuff. And I think that the Zinfandel would go well with that. Okay. Pasta carbonara. Basically, you've got the bacon in there, and so I think that smokiness that's in the dish is going to really pull out that. I think a lot of Zinfandels have a smoke essence to them, so I think that would help. The eggs in there, I also, you know, you're making it with eggs, so I think that helps with the alcohol that potentially can be there. Southwest chimichanga. So now here's the problem with Zinfandel. Okay. Zinfandel is typically high alcohol. So you have to be careful what you're pairing with it. You don't want a spicy food. So this Southwest chimichanga, this Southwest chimichanga has smoke essence to it. It's not a hot, it's not spicy. So that is probably the number one rule that you need to remember, that high alcohol and spice do not go well together. You are going to really start like sweating up a storm if you have hot food with a Zinfandel. And of course, cheese. So generally speaking, Parmesan, aged cheddar, aged Gouda, Asiago, dry Jack, these are all going to go. But if you want to get really, really specific, and you know, as you were talking about, Debbie, how there's the different bodies of Zinfandel, right? So you want to pair your cheese with depending on what body your Zinfandel is. So if it's a light-bodied, I would go with like a mozzarella or a brie. Medium bodied, there's your smoked Gouda or a Gorgonzola. Full bodied, that's your like aged Gruyere, which I'm not going to lie, is probably one of the best pairings on the face of the earth. Aged Greer and Zinfandel. Yum, 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 yum. And then you even can make Zinfandel in a port-like style. And if you are drinking that, then there's that Stilton, that Stilton cheese. Mm. Yeah, which would be...
that would be incredible.
Incredible, right? That's like, blow your mind deliciousness. So that is what I have for food pairings.
We'll move along. Facts. So Zinfandel originated in Croatia, where it's called Slogenic Castellaski, whatever Lori said, which is the red grape of Castella, or Tribidrag, Tribidrag. Zinfandel grown in California and Croatia are genetically identical to Primitivo grown in Puglia. There are 71,000 plus acres of Zin planted worldwide. Only 3% of the vineyards in Napa Valley are planted to Zinfandel. And with that being said, America has the majority of Zinfandel vines. When the grapes arrived in America around 1820, they were being sold under the name Zinfandel, Zenfendal. And then around 1835, the spelling kind of changed as the popularity of the grape started to gain in popularity, and Zinfandel is what it became known as, and that's what we know it as today.
So you got to wonder why. Why was that such a big deal?
I don't know.
What?
I don't know. It's almost like, you know, when you come to immigrants come to the States and they change their name.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Very cool. You know? Very cool.
Yeah. So this is also another picture I took of Turley when I was there in Lodi. We met with the winemaker and had a great time. So most Zinfandel wine is best consumed within 5 years of the vintage. Or less to preserve its fruit and freshness.
Turley, man, that is Zinfandel at its finest.
It is. Let me tell you, the best tasting there. I mean,
yes.
My trip to Lodi, I still have so much more to write about it. It was just amazing.
Well, they're also in Paso.
I'm sorry, what?
They have a tasting room in Paso.
Do they?
Yeah, so we go there a lot, and when you go... Like, that's pretty much the only place you can go, because you are going to taste through about 15 different wines. And they're also very, 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 very dog friendly. So Vegas likes going there.
That's good.
You know what the worst thing about Turley is?
What?
Their bottle shape does not fit in a typical cellar.
Yeah, that happens.
It's horrible.
Oh, see, I did touch a little. I couldn't go without.
Right.
But... during the replanting of California vineyards in the 60s and 70s, acres of Zinfandel were ripped out to make way for new plantings of Cab and Chardonnay. But one vintner who kept his Zinfandel grapes was Bob Chinchero of Sutter Home, and he used them to produce a dry rosé-style wine. In 1975, while his grapes were fermenting, the yeast died before the vine's sugar was converted to alcohol. And he decided to try selling it as a result, this slightly sweet pink wine. And people had a sweet tooth for it. And ta-da, White Zinfandel was a hit.
Ta-da.
So I did do a little touch on the White Zinfandel.
You have to.
So Zinfandel, National Zinfandel Day is November 19th. Drink Zin. Celebrate with us. Get a good bottle of Zin. And Share it with your friends, with your family, and
tag Wine for That Street.
Share tasty notes with us. That's it.
That is it. Oh my God! Cheers, Lancha. We are 26 episodes in. Our first season complete.
You know what I'd like to do is taste a California's, a California's in, a Croatian's in,
Yeah, that Italian. Would be a cool tasting.
An Italian Zin.
That would be cool tasting.
So yeah, all from the same year, so that we're somewhat, you know, even. And
so I would like to thank everybody on behalf of Debbie and myself. Thank you for everybody who has joined us this season, who has listened to the podcast, or who has watched the videos on our YouTube channels.
Visited wineforbetstreet.com.
Yes.
Who has, you have a website.
Yep, who has visited wineforbetstreet.com. Thank you so much. This has been an incredible season. It had some little rough moments there with some of the letters, which are a little rough to get to, but we're going to fight through them in season two. And, you know, each episode, I actually, Debbie, I want to go back and watch A for Albarino. Remember, A for Albarino was on Google Hangouts.
That's right.
And we couldn't we had no visuals because we couldn't share screens. We couldn't do anything like that.
That's right.
And now we have visuals. We, you know, Elmo has always been around, but we have the Elmo song. And I love you, Deb. I love you.
I love you, Lori. And I have to say, I mean, when you put out that thing, does someone want to, you know, do something like this? And I'm like, sure. I had no idea what I was getting into, but I have enjoyed this. And just, I mean, our friendship has grown tremendously from it.
Yes.
And, you know, in so many ways. And it's funny because now I carry, you know, your wine in our restaurant and it's flying off the shelves. And I say it's from Paso Robles. And, you know, it's just a wonderful partnership that, you know, you never know why things happen and people are brought into your life, both good and bad.
Yep.
And, you know, it's for a reason. And for some reason, we were put together to, you know, to grow in this silly, I shouldn't say silly, because it's a wonderful, wonderful wine world that we
right.
have.
Yep.
The amount of support from the wine friends that I have made, both, you know, professionally and personally, it's just incredible. And I don't think, you know, I've never have found that in anything else that I've ever, you know, been involved with.
Yeah. It's one little Facebook post and bam, you know.
Yeah.
You are by far one of my best friends and I wish that we lived closer.
I know.
You know, even when I'm in Jersey, I wish we lived closer. It has been an absolute pleasure to have this season with you. And I can honestly say I cannot wait for the second season to start and to see where we go in season two.
So I think we're going to take September off.
Yes.
So that we can plan out our next season.
Yeah. So and, this season we typically go, oh, what are we doing next month?
Yeah.
So we're going to try to plan out a little bit more.
Yeah, and then we'll be back in October.
Yes.
So, anyway, thank you everybody so much.
Sláinte. Sláinte. Cheers. Here's to Elmo and Wine for Bet Street.
This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt-Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. Until next week, sláinte.